What's up, ATL? It's time now for another Falcon Cast. I know you guys have been patiently waiting.
Appreciate it.
And the group is back together again.
Oh my God. We're all here.
We are like New Edition with Bobby Brown
now
out on
back.
Tour right now.
So who is Bobby then?
You are.
Why does I have to be Bobby? That makes sense to be Bobby. I am not the bad
guy. I'm Ralph T. I'm a man that needs sensitivity.
Was Johnny Gill in that?
He was. He replaced
Bobby.
I'm
Johnny Gill.
Well, that makes Bosek Bobby. I'm not Bobby.
Oh, Bosek is either Bell, Biv, or DeVoe. I think he'd go with DeVoe.
He doesn't know who any of those
None
people
of them.
Are. No idea.
No idea.
Well, we got a ton. We're actually going to talk Falcons today on Falcon Cast.
We are no resting heart rate talk this week, John.
It is a novel concept. I know our schedules, and we apologize to the people that are out there listening to us. I know we get a lot of tweets at falcons.com. Jay gets a lot. DJ does. I do. Brian does as well. We've been trying. It's just Jay's got a busy schedule. Bosek's right now looking at his watch going, you guys have 18 minutes.
Yeah. Bosek's got his flight over here ready to go, you know, man.
I think people don't see, like, the behind-the-scenes stuff about, like, kind of what goes into making this show. And we've got to do some gymnastics just to get the three of us into the same room with Bosek at the same time. And so we try so hard because we have so many loyal listeners. And so even when one of us can't show up, we decide to go ahead and do a show and everything. And, you know, we made some things happen in order to get the three of us in a room. Bosek's going off to Chicago in less than 24 hours, heading up to the draft. So we're all, you know, just kind of making things happen in order to bring you guys this show.
So thank you
for the support. Yes. And for listening and all that stuff.
And as you say that, Bosek hits his phone and he sees a big old Chicago Bull on his, on his.
Their playoff run is going awesome.
Oh yeah, they're undefeated right now.
They are.
They are doing really well.
Big playoff weekend here in the city of Atlanta, but that's not what we're doing Falcon Cast for.
Nope.
It is the NFL Draft Spectacular. The NFL Draft.
The extravaganza.
Starting on Thursday night, Friday, and Saturday. It is an awesome experience. I'm excited because of a couple of different things. A, the Falcons are in a really good position. We haven't had a chance to talk. Really, 2 weeks ago when Jay and I were on, it was, schedule release. Here's what we've got. Not a whole lot going on.
Right.
Now all of a sudden you look around and there's been major trades at the top of the NFL draft. There's been shakeups everywhere. And the Falcons sit in one of those positions right in the middle where if you really want to move up, you could. But if not, and you want to acquire picks, you can slide back down.
We are in a position where just a few weeks ago when we were talking, we never thought that a top five pick could potentially fall to the Falcons at number 17. And that's all I keep hearing is that – Miles Jack is just falling and falling and tumbling and tumbling.
Yeah.
And, I always tell people to be hesitant about the news that they hear in the last 2 weeks before the draft because there's a lot of smoke. There's a lot of guys trying to play the game as far as making people think you're going to go one way and you go the other way. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens, but it's crazy that in the 2 weeks that we've kind of been away from the Falcon Cast, how much has happened to the point where we have a new team sitting at number one and we have a new team sitting at number two. And, oh, by the way, there's this amazing linebacker who could fall to the Falcons at number 17.
That's what's so interesting is people make so much out of what's happening right now. And coaches, the players involved, nobody really had an idea until really it's their time to pick. Mm-hmm. Even though, we've had two teams move up, there's still some up and down about which QB they want to take or, there's still some people poking and prodding, trying to make sure that one guy is the guy for them. And even up until the final day, the final hours, the teams are still scurrying, trying to make sure this is the best pick, this is the best spot for them. So nobody really knows until that time. Right now, it's, like you said, a lot of smoke and mirrors, a lot of people – trying to put feelers out there to say, all right, if we like this guy, then we move up, trying to get other teams interested and see will they be able to move, get more picks. There's so many things going on right now behind the scenes, like you mentioned, that just you never know until actual draft day and that team has to take his card up and say, all right, this is the guy we're taking.
Yeah, and it's funny because just before I came down here to record this, you know, by the time you're listening to this on Wednesday, this could be completely just old news, but I'm hearing that the Saints might be looking to trade up and get into that number one spot to take a quarterback. I mean, these are the kinds of things that happen in the week leading up to the draft. You're just a couple of days away. You've got teams that are jockeying for position, trying to pull the old okey-doke on the other GM. I mean, all these GMs, they know each other, and they know each other well. Mm-hmm. And they're playing a game of chess against each other right now, all of them. Yeah. And, you know, it's kind of funny to see how some teams react to it, how some teams kind of put out little bits of news here and there. And, you know, it's funny because not a lot of it ends up being accurate in the end. But, you know, a lot of things can happen before the Falcons pick. So it's going to be a lot of fun this week and to finally get this over with and see who the next Falcons are going to be.
What I find the most interesting of what's happened the last couple of weeks, you have the Rams move up to number one and they give up a bounty of picks. Then you have the Eagles turn around and move up to number two and they also give up a bounty of picks. You tell me right now who the best quarterback is in this draft. I have no idea. There's no Peyton Manning sitting here. You know, there's no Eli Manning sitting here. There's no Philip Rivers. You're looking at Carson Wentz, who, if you look at the measurables, awesome. He did a great job at the combine. He did a good job at senior day, all of those different things. But he's a guy that played at the FCS level. Granted, they were wildly successful at North Dakota State. They've won, you know, 26 national championships in a row. Them and Mountain Union, I don't think they've ever lost a game since, like, the 1980s. And I know I'm exaggerating a little bit, but you don't know what this guy's going to be at the NFL level. Then you look at Jared Goff. He was on a mediocre Cal team. He really didn't improve the play of anybody around him. I've heard some people say he's way overrated to go this high. But if you're Philly and you're trading to take – you're trading that many picks to move up to two, you're not doing that to take Laremy Tunsil. You're not doing that to take DeForest Buckner.
Right.
You don't trade that kind of stuff. And can you imagine the reaction of the Philly fans? The last quarterback they picked at number two, you know who that was?
Donovan
McNabb. And they booed him out of the building when he walked up there at Radio City Music Hall. And he ended up having a pretty darn good career.
Yeah.
When they pick Jared Goff, if that who ends up being the pick, they're going to boo him out of Philadelphia.
There's no reason why I sit here right now on Tuesday and think that they would not do that. It like you just mentioned, they're going up to two for a reason. There's guys who are already up there who they probably didn't have to move to go get. Like we talked about, so many guys are falling down the wayside right now because there's such an emphasis on getting the quarterback, getting the right quarterback you want. I even coming here, I heard about teams coming in thinking that Paxton Lynch is a guy who can move into that first round and be very high. So there's a lot of things that teams may consider. It only takes one team to like a player and make them want to jump up into the top 10 or top 15 or whatever it may be to grab somebody who everybody thinks is a reach. So it's a possibility that it all could happen. And regardless of who it is, it'll be interesting.
I got a question. You said there's no Peyton Mannings or anything. Is there a Tom Brady sitting deep in this draft?
I mean, there could be. You know, for me, and Connor Cook's not going to be a guy that falls that far. He might be. I've seen mocks that have Denver taking him at the end of the first round, maybe second. He could be one of those players. I've heard Dak Prescott's name thrown around, but he's got a DUI charge that he's dealing with. You know, there are other quarterbacks.
Christian
Hackenberg's a really interesting name if he goes to the right place. But Tom Brady was such a crapshoot. It's a guy that wasn't a full-time starter at Michigan, and now all of a sudden he's arguably the greatest quarterback that's ever played. To DJ's point, what's interesting, where I think the Falcons are in a great position, just say it's Wentz and Goff go off the board. And two teams now know they don't have to draft quarterbacks. Cleveland still need a quarterback?
Mm-hmm.
Probably.
Mm-hmm.
You can probably look around the league. The Jets need a quarterback?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Trying to think of another couple other teams off the top of my head.
The Jets are a team that, when I talked about falling in love, they fell in love with Paxton Lynch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he's one of those guys. Whether you look at Dallas and you say, okay, is Romo trying to get to the end of his career?
Right.
They got to start looking for
Denver.
The future. Denver, you know, they're already looking around for possibly.
San Fran. My point to that is if you're a team that's, especially at Dallas, San Fran, that's going to pick early second round, and you start sitting there and going, all right, with my first pick, I took whomever, a D lineman, an offensive lineman, and I can get my quarterback.
Yeah.
And they may not last. Do you call Thomas Dimitroff and go, all right, we've got a third for you. Heck, we'll throw you this high second, a third, and a fourth.
I think that's the only way it would happen is you've got to give the Falcons the high second because, you know, there's guys there that could be there in the high part of the second round that you would definitely have your eyes on. I think the Falcons would probably stand pretty firm at that. But if you're a team that is desperate for a quarterback and you just happen to think that, you know, Prescott's your guy and you're going to trade up to 17 and try to get him, you're going to have to give up some stuff in order to get up that high. It would be a great move, I think, for us, just because you get more picks. When anytime you go in with five picks, you're hamstrung right off the bat. I think, you know, you want to maybe change that situation if you can. But for some of these other teams that are out there and that could be jockeying for quarterbacks, you talk about, is there a Tom Brady in this draft? I think if you're a team looking for a quarterback, you're just trying to avoid the Jimmy Clausens.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, this is one of those years, like John said, that you don't have a clear-cut, top-rated quarterback that you know is going to lead your team. I think you're rolling the dice on any of these guys. And to give up so much to get them is a real shock. Now, I hope, you know, for their sake, they end up being all right and serviceable quarterbacks. But, man, do you roll the dice when you do that with some guys that have some question marks.
And we've talked about how the Falcons at 17 are in such a good position to be able to do what they want to do. If it's going back, we know Dimitrov in his, you know, 8 years here has always traded up. He's always been the aggressive one. But here's a chance, a possibility to go back and get more picks. Like you said, you have five picks in this draft. You have no fifth. You have no sixth. But you got a seventh round sitting out there. Maybe you know, move up or move back and you get that seventh out of the way. And you bring some guys in, a fifth or sixth, or you bring that second round pick in that can help you. So many options that you have with those five picks to gain more picks because of the position you're in. Anywhere between that 15 to 25 where people feel like, I need to get back up in this first round to get that quarterback or get a guy that we really don't think may be there early in the second round.
Right, and I'm hearing a lot of people say that, you know, the Falcons don't have a lot of ammunition to offer as far as if they did want to trade up, if they did want to, you know, kind of move around a little bit. I think in the predicament that you're in right now, you got five picks. You are in a situation where you could be in a coveted spot when all is said and done. You could end up in a situation where maybe you start packaging some picks for next year. And I know a lot of fans are not going to want to hear that.
Yeah.
I know a lot of fans are not going to want to hear that. But if you're Thomas Dimitroff, if you're Dan Quinn, you know you got to win now.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to get the guys who can help you win now. And if there's a guy out there that can help you, that you feel like can help you from day one, and you got to mortgage a little bit of the future in order to get that, I wouldn't put it outside the realm of possibility. I know that that's not something a lot of people have been talking about, not a lot of people have been thinking about, but
right.
This is why, you know, the last 2 weeks before the draft are kind of crazy. You got to think about these types of scenarios.
And do you
give up a potential maybe third or fourth rounder next year to move up and get a guy maybe in the second round that you want?
My big question is, if you have a guy who you feel is number one throughout your board, or you feel is number one on – where you really feel like he fits this scheme really well, i.e. a Darren Lee or somebody who you feel like really fits in well with what you want to do, do you worry about that now and move it up maybe into the top 10 to go get a guy like that you know right now can come in and be a significant three-down player for you and can add instant impact to your defense if we're trying to win right now? Is that your mind frame right now to give up a few for a little bit later on, but we have to get it done right now because he is the prototypical guy for us?
Thomas Dimitroff's MO has been Trader Tom. And typically it's been moving up. He may move back in some of the later rounds.
Right.
But early on, if he sees his guy, whether it's Desmond Trufant, whether it's Sam Baker, who he's traded up to get before, obviously Julio's the big one that everybody knows about. He's made that move. They coveted a guy. We're going to go get him. We'll move around whatever it takes to do so. I know fans would not be in favor of trading picks from next year because you don't want to be in that same situation a year from now going, man, we're another year into Matt Ryan's career. Julio's another year older. You know, what happens if the guy you draft doesn't work out? Do you want to be mortgaging the future?
Well, this is what happens when you have some picks, especially near the higher rounds of the draft where you didn't nail it.
Mm-hmm.
This is what happens is you end up chasing. And you end up chasing for a couple of years. And sometimes you've got to, give up something, you know, in order to get the guys that you want and just say, hey, look, you know, we have to do what we have to do right now to win. I don't know if it's a possibility. I'm just literally pulling this out of thin air, but it's an option on the table.
The I think the big question that the fans would throw out, or I think the big thing that pure Falcon fans would say is, they would say, with you having the 17th pick and having a one guy, do you worry about having – you have so many other needs that you have to really go after and say, okay, we need a safety, we still need pass rushers, we need, you know, more athletic linebackers, things like that. Do you really mortgage next year or 2 years for one guy that you think can really be a glue for your,
if you
for
do,
your defense?
Okay, if that was the situation, who would you do it for? What player out there would you do it for?
One guy would do it for you. I mean, that one guy.
Yeah, who's the one guy you would do it for?
There's nobody in this draft that I'd do it for.
Nobody.
I think the people are too – they're lumped too closely together. You could split hairs. You know, the question is, do you go pass rush? And I think everybody knows this team with 19 sacks, you need a pass rusher. And you start throwing out the names that are pass rushers. Shaq Lawson, Leonard Floyd, Kevin Dodd. These are just a couple of names. Is there anything really discernible difference between any one of those three where you'd feel like I need to give away an asset for next year to go get them? There's nobody perceived in this draft like Jadeveon Clowney. And I know Clowney has not been a star in the NFL. When he was coming out, everybody said, this has got to be the guy. Well, then if it's not him, it's got to be Khalil Mack. And Khalil Mack's turned out to be pretty darn good.
But I think one guy who, even though with the issues, Miles Jack is that guy for it. I think that everybody would mortgage something on because of his talent.
He's the only guy I could see doing it for. The only
one. But I can't because there is a question about his knee.
Right.
You know, I know he's had the report saying this is nonsense. You've had doctors that have said, the knee is kind of iffy.
All that matters is what your doctor says.
Of course.
Because your doctors are
Where's Dr.
Karros? Yeah.
Can we get him in here?
Your doctors are the ones that have gotten their hands on these players. And you know, why do you ever go for a second opinion? It's because doctors, you know, don't always agree on a diagnosis. So, you know, and that's the chance you got to take. You got to roll the dice on that stuff, and you got to trust your doctor to kind of make that correct assessment for a guy. But it's interesting. I would say if you're going to take a guy with knee problems, maybe you just wait for Jalen Smith until you can take him, because he seems like he might have a higher ceiling if he's even able to play.
He's an interesting question. I want to pose this to both of you guys. Jalen Smith, before the injury in the Fiesta Bowl, which, by the way, I think brings up a whole nother topic of kids in meaningless bowl games going, you know what, I'm out.
Yeah.
If I'm going to be a top – if I'm a first-round grade – I'm not playing in some stupid bowl game.
Yeah.
If it ain't playing for a championship, why am I playing? But again, that's a different story that we could talk about later on this offseason. Jalen Smith was a guy that was a consensus top five pick. Some people had him at number one if Tennessee would have made the pick, because they were originally the team that was on the clock. Then the knee problem happens. Now there's talk about nerve damage. He's already come out and said he's going to miss the 2016 season. What's the earliest, and I'm saying as an Atlanta Falcon person, what is the earliest you would draft Jalen Smith this year?
Mm. If you stick with five picks, I don't think you can take the chance.
Not at all?
I don't. You have to win now. You have to win now if you're in this regime. And so you can't sit here and say, okay, well, you know, Jalen Smith maybe can't play this year. We're okay with letting him rehab for a year and then seeing what we got next year. I don't think that you can make that decision. Now, if you're sitting there with 11 picks and you're in the same situation, different story.
Yeah.
You know, but you got five picks. You got to get all five picks right. You've already had your owner come out and say, hey, we expect three of the five to be first-year starters.
So now you take Jalen Smith, you 75%, three out of four hitting starters.
Exactly.
And one of those picks is a seventh rounder.
Right. So. Now, the thing is like, to your point, if none of that happened, we're talking about him as the Jadeveon Clowney of this draft. I think there's no question about it. He has so much talent at that position, and I think that there are a lot of teams that still think that he's going to play, and he's going to play at a very high level at some point. There are other teams that think that he may never play a snap of football. So when you've got that wide of an opinion spectrum to kind of run off of, it's tough sitting at five picks to be like, oh yeah, we can roll the dice and kind of take a chance on this guy.
Where this organization is right now, you can't do it. Where you sit with five picks, where you sit with the sense of urgency on this defense, where you need playmakers to come in and play in 2016, you can't take that risk right now because of where you're at. And like you mentioned, Arthur Blank came out and said something about it. We know about 19 sacks last year. We know there was times where, you know, we had serviceful guys out there playing the linebacker position. You got to have those guys in place from day one because – you don't have 2, 3, 4 years to get this thing rolling, especially with the counterparts around you who are getting better. You look at the schedule for this season. We already talked about that. This is going to be a big-time year. You need all your big-time players to be able to play in all games. So I think right now, where you are right now, you can't risk 2 years because you need year one.
Right, right.
I'm a risk taker.
I know you are. You want to
third,
roll the dice.
Third or fourth round, if he's sitting there, I'm rolling the dice.
Third's you're too high. I'd be okay with fourth. Third's too high.
You're talking about a kid that if he can come back healthy, and again, this is up to your doctor and everything else. If he can come back healthy, you basically get a first-round pick next year.
You're right.
Remember what the Buffalo Bills did a few years back? Well, it was almost a decade ago.
Yep.
Willis McGahee coming off the same injury, same stupid bowl game, the Fiesta Bowl. No offense to the Fiesta Bowl, but that place has bad memories.
Banned the Fiesta
Bowl. Lost the Fiesta Bowl, getting none of a shade.
Lost a couple of national championships out there. I'm not bitter. Not bitter. I'm just saying. Lost a few. Maybe robbed of one, but that's neither here nor there.
More like the Siesta Bowl for you.
It typically is. But Willis McGahee blows out his knee.
Yeah.
He has Drew Rosen.
Terribly.
Yeah, terribly. Probably just as bad, if not worse, than Jalen Smith. What do the Bills do? They draft him in the first round and stashed him. And he ended up being pretty good. Wasn't great. Was pretty. He had a solid NFL career. Yes. Solid, 10 and a half, 11 years.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know. I absolutely get your point.
The if factor is just so big. It's so huge.
It's the if factor and what do you perceive as your still gaping holes on defense? And that's ultimately what you've got to decide as a team, right? So, you know, for me, it's you got to look at your first three picks as – you know, we got to hit on guys who your first two have to be able to start, and then your third has to be able to come in and spell at times in sub packages. So I think if you go defense the first three picks, it's tough for me to justify taking a guy who's not going to see anything but the bench in the third round.
And
in the fourth, sure. If he's sitting there in the seventh, absolutely. But I don't know that you can what you have.
I'm trying to remember.
You're doing math, aren't you?
Well,
stop.
There's some.
Stop.
Last year's second rounder was Jalen Collins. The second rounder the year before was Rashid Hageman. Who were the third rounders the last 2 years?
Desmond Southward was one.
Mm-hmm.
And fans are probably screaming.
Right.
Into the speakers.
How do you guys not know right now?
Jalen Collins.
This is what happens when you're on draft week and you've got 1,611 names.
Justin Hardy or Tevin Coleman?
Tevin Coleman.
Okay, so here's my point.
Here's my point
with that. Not knocking any of those guys. We think TC is going to be a pretty darn good running back. And
yeah.
None of those players we just named were impact guys.
None.
A lot of them their first year didn't do a whole lot. They sat or they played minimal snaps. If I can get a first-round talent, a consensus top five talent in the third round, I got to take him.
You got Grady Jarrett in the fourth round, though. He's done something for you.
Yeah, and you got Devontae Freeman in the fourth round. So they could be had.
So you're betting that his second year, he's full throttle.
Yep.
You're betting he is good to go, no problem, no issues.
I saw some videos. He's working out. He's running. He's doing all
kinds
of stuff.
He was tied to one of those bands doing some things. I was like,
I don't know anything about nerves and knees and all that other stuff, but I mean, look good to me.
But the way the doctors are now, the way the medicine is now, they're gonna find ways. They're, you know, back in the day, you take ACL, you freaking may not play.
Oh anymore. Yeah, I mean,
you know, but now it's walking. You know, you're back and good to go. So you never know what kind of stuff he's got going on. I mean, this year, last year we heard about freaking Kobe going across the country to get plasma and all this. I mean, there's so much stuff out there that can help players and be able to get back to, you know, back to where they were. So I wouldn't put it by the kid. So saying you can get a first round talent in the fourth round or third round and, you know, sit him for, I can understand where you're coming from with, you know, what's happened over the past couple of years, and it's kind of the same thing. And then now you got the second year coming around, they'd be ready to go. But it's a long shot.
What's great, if you go in that scenario, there are enough pass rushers, they're graded in the second round where you get them. Jonathan Bullard out of the University of Florida. Noah Spence, you never know where he's going to go.
Okay, let's talk about this kid for a minute. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about this kid for a minute if you guys know enough about him. I mean, here's a kid who clearly has or had some off-field issues. Mm-hmm. Could end up being one of those guys who really turns himself around. Or he could be like another Manziel. He's a party kid, I guess, is kind of what.
Well, he got kicked out of the Big Ten. Right. So that kind of lets you know he had some mishap. From what I understand, it was I don't want to call it an ecstasy ring, but he may have.
that sounds major.
Yeah, he may have been
the leader of the ring.
He may have been distributing some party drugs.
There was an LLC that was set up.
It's Noah Spence LLC.
You know, here's a kid that has been working with Chuck Smith, former Falcon, and Chuck Smith takes to Twitter and basically says that he's the best pass rusher in the draft. He's going to be amazing. Look out for this kid in the future. Do you think he's just – his name is just crossed off the board up there with Robert Kimdichie, or do you think that both of those guys are in play for Atlanta?
I don't think anybody's out of the realm of just totally gone, because I think over the years you've gone the role of you're going to stay away from those type of quote-unquote character issue guys or things that's going on off the field. You hope a guy grows up. You want to give the guy a benefit of doubt, but I don't think you ever completely counsel him out.
I've heard about the Falcons filter, though, for so long.
Yeah,
I think we all have heard. Falcons filter. Black mark. Not going to be on
it. It has to go.
Last year, though, you took a shot. Jalen Collins. Rashid Hageman was a shot. Prince Shembo was a shot.
Then.
So maybe it's a little bit looser. I wouldn't have either one of those kids off the board. Robert Kimdichie is the interesting one to me because he grew up right down the road from here.
Right.
That kid had top overall pick talent. Problem is the motor isn't always on.
Right.
I think a little bit of that, maybe he was a little bit entitled. Now there's the issue of what happened down in Buckhead. You know, was he on synthetic weed? He fell out of the second floor, walked out, whatever it may be. Lucky to be alive, truthfully.
Yeah.
But he's a kid that could go from a year ago, if you mocked, Robert Kimdichie was number one or number two.
Yeah.
Now he might be second, third round. Do you take him? Yes, because you don't come across talent like that. You hope that Brian Cox on the D-line could kick him in the rear end and get him to play, you know, 50 snaps a game.
I don't think he makes it out of the first round.
You don't think so?
No, mm-hmm. I don't think so either.
I don't think he does.
It doesn't take but one.
Yeah. If he's had a good interview with two or three teams, I know he's had some choice interviews with other teams, but it doesn't take but one. I think his talent alone tells you this guy, we can change him around. There's somebody in our organization that can get to this kid. Like you said, a Brian Cox, maybe somebody who can reach him. I don't think he gets out of the first round.
You're always going to have that organization that feels like, okay, you can teach behavior, you can teach discipline, you can teach all those things. You can't teach the level of talent that comes from some of these guys. And you remember Ndamukong Suh, you know, when he was coming out of in the draft, you know, the concerns were, does he play the way he's been playing, you know, which is a little on the, I don't know, what do we want to call it? To the edge of the whistle? Is that the way we want to put it?
Yeah.
You know, but you still end up with a guy who ends up being extremely talented and kind of reaches his potential for you, causes maybe some problems for you on the field. But, you know, that's the chance you take with some of these guys, you know, they all come from very different backgrounds and all have very different personalities, and that's why this draft process of, you know, interviews and visits and workouts and all that other stuff is so important. You get a feel for a guy, and you can basically gauge, is this somebody I can get through to?
How long have we talked about the Falcons need somebody with edge?
Yeah, no,
you're
right.
We talked about it so much.
We need some dogs.
That's why I said it doesn't. I don't think we talked about the filter and everything that the Falcons have had over the years, and I don't think that's something there now that they are cutting guys off
because of things that's happened in the past, because they look for some guys with a little bit of edge. But we have some guys on this staff that can say, all right, we can reach these guys. We can make sure. Obviously, you can't control a kid all the time, but we got guys who we feel like can get to these kids, but we still need that. We need that edge. We need that dirty guy sometimes.
But let's talk about what edge truly means. I mean, does edge mean that you're going to, you know, step on a guy's head while he's down and, you know, and he's trying to get up? Or is edge, when I think of edge and a type of player that I want from a prototype standpoint, I want a guy like a Mike Peterson who has those leadership abilities, but is also on the field. He is a dog. He is going to go after you. He is going to get the job done.
Go back to the years of Mud Duck, Tom McClure, Tyson Clabo, Harvey Dahl. Those were all just good guys.
Good guys.
Playing to the edge of the whistle. Yeah. But those were the guys that you needed with that edge. But they knew just how far to go, but they knew what kind of edge.
And you know what's funny is, you know who strikes me as that guy in this draft? Is Darren Lee. He strikes me as that kind of, he's a very smart kid, well-spoken, has that, it feels like he has that leadership potential, feels like he embraces that kind of role. The more you think about a kid like this, the more you think about maybe the intangible stuff that makes him more of a can't-miss kind of guy.
Right. You know, the guys that I think of with edge, and the edge that I'd be looking for is a guy like Joey Porter.
Yeah.
That outworked you.
Sure.
That outworked everybody, but got on the field and people feared him. Not feared in a bad way. Feared in a way that this guy was coming to knock your head off.
And we haven't had those kind of. You know this guy going to bring it.
You know, Harvey Dahl was kind of the one guy I can remember in the last 6 or 7 years, because Harvey wasn't trying to injure you, but he was trying to put the fear of God in a defensive lineman. Yep. He was trying to make sure you knew every time where he was at on the field. The Falcons, you know, I'll call spade a spade, haven't had that on the defensive side of the ball. Abe was close, because Abraham would play. Yeah. You know, Abraham played pretty hard and pretty tough. I don't know that he worked the way that Joey Porter, not that anybody did. I mean, Joey Porter's this, you know, completely insane human being trying to get in shape and stay ready to play football.
Yeah.
Here's the way I know that people have the edge, or people want guys like this. I remember we used to watch film, or coaches watch film the same way. And this guy just keeps flashing on film. He keeps doing things here and there. And then you speak of guys, when you play them, you got to know where they are. You got to know what they're going to do every single play, because they may be trying to take your head off. Those are the guys who flash for you. When you watch the film, you turn on the tape, and other teams or opposing teams are watching you, and they say, okay, I got to make sure this guy right here is in my peripherals at all time. Or I got to make sure we know where he is. We got to account for him, because this guy could wreak havoc. Troy Polamalu was one of those guys who every time he was on the field, you had to know where he was.
Right.
Because he could take the ball away. He can knock your head off. He was going to do some unorthodox things. He played on the edge. But that's the type of guy you wanted on your – especially on the defense side of the ball.
Now, you can give me a James Harrison or a London Fletcher any day of the
London
week,
Fletcher,
too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. I think the overall point that we're trying to make here is that – you don't need a guy with character problems to have an edge or have that dog in them. Mm-hmm. It's just that something switches on when they hit the field. And there are guys on this team right now. Adrian Claiborne strikes me. He is that guy who, when he steps on the field, he's a completely different person than he is off the field.
He scares me when he gets on the bus. Yes. He gets on the bus, he I gets just on put the, my head down. Eye contact.
Exactly. I love Adrian. We talk all the time. But he is, on game day, one of the scariest individuals I've ever seen. And that's the type of guys that you want. So you're getting you're looking for those kind of character traits. And it's tough to duplicate what a James Harrison is or what a London Fletcher is. Mm-hmm. But they're out there. You've just got to spot the traits.
It's funny. Both of those guys you mentioned, weren't they both undrafted? James Harrison out of Kent State, cut. London
undersized.
Maybe it's just that you got to get those guys who feel like they got something to prove.
Ryan Schrader's that way.
Yeah, you're right.
Say what you want. Undrafted, he's come in and was the highest graded O-lineman we had a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Played his rear end off, got rewarded with a nice little contract.
Yep.
He'll get some more after this season.
Yeah,
no doubt about it.
Exactly.
Being undrafted and playing hard, that's why I would not take Robert Kimdichie, but I would take Noah Spence. I don't think Robert Kimdichie's got that dog in him.
Yeah. I think he's kind of like your Jadeveon Clowney.
He was so talented for high school. He dominated.
That's close there, yeah.
It's your closest comparison. Yeah. When you're talking about a guy, that was the knock on Jadeveon. He wouldn't give you everything on every play, and that's a knock on this kid too.
That's how I see him as well. I see both those guys in the same bubble as when they want to.
Right.
It's not all the time. It's when they feel like it or they feel like they can be the best player on the field, they will, but not at all times.
But getting through to them is you're either going to get one of two things. You're either going to get defiance in response, or maybe you're going to get what you actually want. And what you have to do is determine somehow in the limited amount of time that the NFL gives you to evaluate these guys, is this guy going to completely shut down on me when I get hard on him, when I give him tough love? Or is he going to actually use it as fire, as motivation, and become the player and person that we want him to be? And that's tough to figure out. You don't have analytics for that kind of stuff. And ultimately, that can help determine what kind of player you end up being. I think that you look at a Rashid Hageman. We watched him on Hard Knocks, and you saw the issues that he had on Hard Knocks, and we're still working through some of the things that you were seeing in Hard Knocks, and you're hoping in year three that he comes in and he's a mature player who understands the opportunity in front of him, and it's working with a guy like a Brian Cox who can give you that tough love but also kind of pat you on the back at the same time. Right. Not break you down too much that a lot of these guys respond to.
Let me pose a question on the other side. We talked about the guys with the little issues. At 17, if you have a position, you're in a position, say a guy, you have two guys at this spot that we saw Leonard Floyd. We heard he came in here, I think the Falcons went down and worked him out at Georgia, had a great workout. If it's Leonard Floyd at 17, also with Darren Lee, if it happens – and you're thinking about pass rush, 19 sacks, you're thinking about a guy who can possibly cover, do you want the pass rush to go on alongside Vic Beasley, somebody who can complement him, or do you want that third down guy who can also help? I mean, what?
Let me tell you, if Leonard Floyd is there at 17 and you pick a Darren Lee or a Reggie Ragland over him, I am going to the Falcons Twitter account and I am going to deactivate account. I am deleting that account because I just don't want to know.
Yes, because all 100,000 plus that were at Sanford Stadium for G-Day will be livid. Oh, they will be hot.
But here's the thing.
Especially if it's Darren Lee, because that's going Big Ten.
Right.
Oh, yeah, they'll be upset.
Here's my thing. If Leonard Floyd is there, I feel like the Falcons would waste very little time in getting the card up to the podium to pick him. It's you've got to really you hope that you end up with options, right?
Yeah.
You hope that you end up with options and you've had a couple of drafts here where you've ended up with options. It's one of those things. It depends on the way you look at it. Either the clear
so
cut Florida, guy
is a Florida guy you'll move up to get?
No, I told you there's nobody I'm moving up for, not in this draft.
You're not moving up?
No.
If he's there, like, if he's at like 14?
No, I'm not moving up. I'm not willing to give up future assets for somebody in this draft. I just think they're all too lumped closely together from like prospect 10 through 18 to 20.
Gotcha. I think you're right on that. I think you're right on that. You want to trade up?
No.
What are you giving up?
I was just posing the question. No, I'm perfectly good with staying at 17 if, your desired guys are still there. Obviously, Floyd is a good talent, but like John mentioned, I think still, he won't be there around that time. So I don't think it's worth moving up.
I don't think he's
up.
A sure thing. I agree that he's a talent. He's not a sure thing. This is a guy that, last year was playing at 225, 235 pounds. Can he handle? We talked about Vic Beasley last year. Could you handle 16 games at this? Vic's about 15 pounds heavier than he is.
Yeah.
Can this kid come in and be your bookend D? Right. Do you want your DNs combined to weigh like 460 pounds? Not a lot.
It's not a lot, but I also you've got to look at the we're looking at the pieces. You got to look at the whole. And when you have guys like Adrian Claiborne, you've got high expectations for Grady Jarrett coming into year two. Jonathan Babineau is still playing at a high level. You're you're hoping for big things out of Rashid Hageman. You bring in Courtney Upshaw, who sets that edge for you. You know, you've got some pieces there that you bring in another piece, and it could make all the difference, where some of the attributes of some of these other guys maybe mask the weaknesses or perceived weaknesses of a guy that you bring in the draft. So if there's a guy that maybe isn't as heavy as you want him to be in his first year, you know, maybe
come have him stay with me. I'll bulk him up.
We'll get him where he needs to be.
It's the hybrid life, though. I mean, these hybrid guys
He likes those hybrids. Right. Dan Quinn likes those hybrids.
You look at Seattle, man, they had a lot of in-between guys playing positions that were very successful at what we were doing. And like you mentioned, there are a lot of different pieces. So you may not need them to play every single down.
Right.
You have a couple packages. We saw last year, Coach Quinn was bringing in packages left and right. They had four or five guys coming in. They had a pass rush package. They had a couple guys who can be in there doing rundowns. So they're going to have different packages for different guys. So it doesn't have to be the ideal fit for three downs as we would like him, like a Darren Lee, but somebody who's rushing the passer.
Who do you guys think is in the first round? Who's your biggest – who's your gamble? Who's the guy that maybe you thought was a sure thing, but now the more we go, he's looking more and more
it's
like
It's easy
gamble.
For me. Pick a quarterback. Yeah. Any one of these quarterbacks, I've watched it, whether it was Jake Locker, Christian Ponder, you know, you could go down the list, Joey Harrington, Akili Smith, guys go high – and you look back 5 years from now, and that team's picking high again because that quarterback stunk.
Hey,
Los Angeles and Philly gave up a whole lot. Those two kids better pan out.
Yeah.
Did you guys get the letter from Jamarcus Russell?
You guys
got that letter? I know he sent it all 32 teams. He's one of those guys, right?
Yeah. He said he'll play for free. Guess what, Jamarcus? I'll play for free.
Same here.
Now, I think he'll make it longer through practice one than I would. I'd probably get injured getting taped up.
I don't think so. I think dude, you got a better chance.
I have torn stuff doing nothing. Like, literally, Dr. Karras would be back there taping me and something would pop. It wouldn't be the tape.
The past two mornings I have woken up injured for whatever reason. My back is killing me. But a guy who seems like he might be a little bit more of a question mark at this point than maybe he was a couple of weeks ago is a Reggie Ragland to me. And I don't know, maybe it's the whole
– Is it the 270?
It's the 270. It's the two down versus three down. You know, you want a three down guy.
So Nick Saban ran him into the ground.
I just don't know. I don't know anymore about, like, a couple of weeks ago I would have said he would be a great pick, and now I'm maybe not so sure.
Shock, I got another one that's pretty good. Here's my people that are going to be bust, most likely. Somebody pick from the University of Florida, Penn State, Oklahoma State, Florida State, North Carolina, or Wisconsin. USA Today did, in the last 15 years,
the
most first-round busts produced by schools, University of Florida. 53% of their first-round picks have been bust. Wow. Florida State, 47%.
Vernon Hargrave's not going to be a bust, though.
You hope not.
You hope he's a bust if he goes to Tampa.
I mean, what's the kid that
he better be a bust if he goes to Tampa.
What's the kid that was just released by New England from Florida? Dominic Easley?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a first-round pick.
Yeah.
That's what happens.
It is amazing, man. That's why I love you see some of these experts, you know, it's mock draft, you know, coming out my ears most times. But some of these draft do-overs that some of the experts do, it's actually kind of cool.
Those are fun.
It's cool to see, like, where these guys would have ranked. Like, I think in 2013, Bucky Brooks had Desmond Trufant instead of going at 22, where we traded up to get him there. Mm-hmm. He made him the number two overall pick of that draft.
And wow.
So, I mean, that's the kind of stuff. I mean, hindsight is always 20/20, we say, and you never know with these kids, but to see some of the busts and who actually does make it.
What's interesting is I read something today, and it goes back to what we talked about when we first came on air about how much things change. Now there was an article saying that Scott Pioli was all about offensive linemen and wanting to get in the guard, and if things don't pan out, then possibly move back and get an offensive lineman. So there's so many things that could happen.
That's the thing is, like, we've been talking about defense all year, and you could easily justify if you can get a guard who you think can be your your Jake Matthews of that position for the next 10 years. At 17, why not?
Well, I think everybody would be okay with a guard. The problem is the kids that are rated there are all tackles.
Yeah. Right.
And I've heard people say, well, just move somebody inside.
No, that's not how it works.
No. Offensive line is not, you know.
It drives me nuts.
It's not like running back.
No.
They're interchangeable. No, guards are, they play different than tackles. Centers, as we saw a year ago, Mike Person struggled when we slid him over to center. It's not easy just to go, oh, you're an O lineman, you play here.
Yeah.
So, no, if you got a guard, draft a guard, but there's no guards rated in the first round.
All right, guys. So I know that we spend, you know, a lot of time working during the draft, and, you know, it's always one of those events that you look forward to.
And then you look forward for it to be over
forward
with.
Forward to it to be over, exactly. What is your favorite part of the draft that is not related to choosing a pick?
For me, it's school pride.
School pride?
Yeah, school
pride. How many players get drafted by this particular school?
Miami had that streak forever. I think it was 14 straight years with a guy drafted in the first round. We hold the record for the most first-round picks in one draft with six. In 2004. Six could be challenged. Ohio State and Alabama both have a lot of first-round grades this year.
It's last time Miami did anything, huh? Right there in 2004.
It's whatever.
Wow.
But yeah, for me, that's the school pride. You know the school that produces the least amount of busts in the last 15 years? Do I need to tell you guys? I will anyway. Here the University of Miami. 26 first-round picks in the last 15 years, which, by the way, is more than anybody. Only four busts.
By the way.
Four out of 26.
Wait, so who were the four?
It doesn't say who. I would say if I'm thinking.
Who would you say?
Jerome McDougal, who got shot. So I, you know, can't really hold that against the kid getting
shot. I'm holding that against me. He shouldn't have been in the place where he got shot. I'm just playing.
He was a bust. And from 2000 on, maybe Mike Rump, who wasn't all that. He's now a coach. Yeah. I like Kelly Rump, Jennings, though. I think from Seattle, may have been one.
Corner, right?
Yeah, corner. Yeah.
Real slim, small corner.
Yeah, and I don't know.
Roscoe Parrish.
Now, he was a third round. It's only first rounders.
No, I know. I'm just naming Miami players I remember.
Leonard Hankerson. I think the only other one that I can think of maybe is Kellen Winslow, if you consider him a boss.
Ah, that's true.
But he did have a couple of really good years.
Soldier.
Somebody tweeted us the other day and said that we need to sign Kellen Winslow, and Kellen Winslow actually like favorited the tweet.
That would be awesome.
Oh, my God, I forgot about
that guy.
Oh, yeah.
So he's been out of the league, what, 2 years now?
Yeah.
Or just one.
He finished. No, it's been at least two.
So he had the incident in the parking lot.
I thought he morphed into Vin Diesel and was making movies, action movies.
Crashed a bike in Cleveland, then had another incident, which we won't talk about. But
do we have a break with Bosak?
We do.
That was a good break with Bosak question, actually.
The one
so
I just asked?
Keep going with that.
There you go.
We only had one answer. No,
so it's
no.
A break with
that
Jay.
Was a good
We're already running. We're already running.
Oh,
what, long,
the, so. Favorite, the favorite part of the draft?
Yeah.
For me, it is the excitement leading up to that pick in the first round. Least favorite is everything after that. everything
waiting
after that.
All day on
waiting, Friday is a grind for us because you have the pick in, and that's exciting. You have the pick come in and take a tour and do the press conference and all that stuff. And all that stuff will be live on AtlantaFalcons.com.
Two rounds on Friday, two and three, right?
Two rounds on Friday, and so you find out who your picks are there, and that's nice. Then you get to Saturday, and Saturday just drags. It just drags. It'll start at noon. It'll end at like 6 or 7.
Well, especially this year.
That's why from 4 to 7. Look, we need to go ahead and get out at 7th and just come on up.
I have approached several scouts and offered cash
to get rid
of that 7th round pick.
Come on up to the 5th,
just
man.
Just come on.
Get on out of here.
You know. Just do that. We'll trade you Bosak and a 7th rounder to get it.
We're not getting rid of Bosak.
No,
Bosak's
I know. He's too valuable.
DJ, your favorite part?
Favorite part for me, I would say, is watching the excitement from the players when they get drafted.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It's a pretty cool moment because I've been there. I know what it feels like. But then also those higher pick guys who you see everything. You see their families. Everybody's, you know, meeting somewhere. I mean, that is – what it's really about, seeing guys' dreams come true, knowing that you're going to play on the highest level, and I think that's pretty exciting for me.
If you were one of these top picks and you got invited to like the green room, would you go or would you stay home and have a party at home?
I'm going.
You're going?
Because it's once in a lifetime.
You're going?
Going.
I'm staying home.
Dude, you heard about the gifts you get? You get crazy gifts.
Oh, I didn't know there were gifts.
Oh, crazy gifts.
when you get back the next day, man, you get back the next day, you can have the party you want. I mean, come on.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm going then. I didn't know that. I didn't know all that was. I was like, oh man, I'd rather just rent out a park.
Yeah, dude, they do like a photo shoot with Tide. They do a photo shoot with Bose, and they get paid for doing that stuff.
Oh, so yeah. Okay. Yeah, no, I'm going.
Major watches. I mean, it's just.
No, I'm in. Say no more. I'm in.
Looks like your favorite part of the draft.
Well, this year for me, it's going to the draft. Nice. So being in that auditorium is going to be unreal.
Like, are you going to be sitting next to the, you know, when I have the headphones?
Do you get to actually be the guy that runs the card up?
No, I will not be that man.
Will you run up on stage while our pick is standing there with
with
the commissioner and take a selfie with him and then go running off?
Be the guy standing right by the end of the stage because you're always going to get some camera time because they show him walking.
Yeah, you're right.
They show him walking onto the stage.
And you're going to have the logo on and you're going to get some love.
Who does get to walk up for the Falcons?
And then have Bosa standing there with Jim Spear. It's kind of with his
mug.
It's kind of funny how teams do this because I think you know maybe not a lot of people know how this is all done. So you send two people up to wherever the draft is held, and you would think as a football fan you would think it would be members of your scouting staff or your front office or or something like that, and it's not. The one guy who's been going for years and years and years is Spencer Treadwell, and he is the director of logistics.
Logistics. Does he get to carry the card up there?
He writes. He is on the phone with TD. He writes the name down, and then hands it over to Mike Cruz, who is in charge of the video department for practice. He's you know not video like Bosek does.
Spence
but,
did that. That's
yeah.
All right,
so Spence goes up every year, and Mike Cruz. He goes up and it, you know, so you see that sometimes you get the shot of him sitting there waiting for the pick and everything.
Can
like
we
that.
Get like a contest going?
What's that?
To win a trip to walk the card up. And it doesn't have to be the first round. We could be the seventh round.
There is a contest. You missed it, though.
I don't think I'm eligible to win, though.
It was like an Equifax contest or something.
DeMarco won. He's going to
go. Oh, yeah. Patrick DeMarco is announcing our third round pick. So that'll be good.
Good for him.
And, yeah, so those guys do that, and that's pretty cool. And Spence will usually take a picture of the card and text it to me so I can tweet it out for everybody.
Nice. My one other favorite thing.
And then send it to me.
If
Bosek gets to come to Chicago, you know what my one other favorite thing is? The idiot. No, I don't want to call them idiots. The fans in the crowd that are dressed, you know, full war paint. And their
full
pick
regalia.
Comes in. Are you kidding me?
See,
the
but
Jets
that's why
fans,
it was a Jets fan.
The Giants.
York,
yeah,
man. Yeah. You see
that? That's why they've got to have the draft in Philadelphia some year.
No, they don't.
Yes, they do. Just so you can see
the
reaction.
Jail there and everything too.
If I wasn't going to the draft last year, another great moment for me was having the live feed to our war room, so we'd see like kind of you couldn't hear them, but you would see the interactions of them. You will see a live look on NFL Network for a brief time.
Yeah.
So they're not doing it this year? The live look in?
Well, I won't. I'll be in Chicago.
He'll be
so
in
I won't
Chicago.
Be
he won't be able to watch the television.
That's
like
why
us.
Yeah. Bosek he makes sure nobody else
can
run this.
When we see the lens cap come off, it's
Yeah, Jay, I will need you to sneak me into your office.
There's
a music going.
We got the some of the guys next door must be playing some shooty hoops over there.
Shooty hoops, all right.
With jamming, I think.
Well, speaking of shooty hoops, it's time to get home.
It's time
for the Atlanta Hawks, their playoff game.
Come on, Hawks.
But everybody that listen, man, we really appreciate it. Subscribe on iTunes. Go to FalconCast. Look for us on iTunes. We'll be back next week to break down the new Falcons. Oh, we got 13 of them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, baby.
All right, guys.
13 of them.
See you.
See you. Holla.